Welcome to Local Matters, our Mountain Express news podcast. This is Margaret Williams, news editor, joined by senior news reporter David Forbes.
Thank you.
Who had what he calls an eventful city council meeting the other night.
Yes, going into it, it looked like the major matter was going to be the new fee package, which I'll get to in a second. It's part of council's attempt to balance their budget.
So a variety of fees across departments, mm-hmm. across affecting a lot of people.
Yes, mm-hmm. and after that happened, after all the other events happened, there was one more item to be added to the agenda. $175,000 for a full audit of the Asheville Police Department evidence room, which, as longtime listeners may know, was recently put under investigation and sealed by the State Bureau of Investigation.
And for some missing stuff.
Missing stuff. Specifically, at first it was 397 missing tablets of oxycodone taken as part of a drug trafficking case. And then results came out on April 8th that a partial audit had been done when the previous property room manager left suddenly after being placed under investigative suspension. And that revealed 115 missing items from what they call the critical or high-value items, which are basically guns, drugs, and money. 27 missing guns and multiple missing amounts of drugs and money. The man who conducted that partial audit, a former APD major, said that the record-keeping system did not seem reliable, that there seemed issues with it, and that in some cases you'd had items like bags of marijuana stored so long the packaging had begun to decay. So this kind of tense scene, the DA has been notably very critical.
Ron Moore is the local district attorney.
Ron Moore is the local district attorney. He's been so for some time. He has been sharply critical of the Asheville's police department's leadership, and he was very critical at this meeting. He went up there and he said that, this was... He should have been informed as soon as it was clear there were all these missing items. Chief Hogan of the Asheville Police Department has claimed, we weren't going to inform you because the report hadn't been done yet. Moore said he had to inform lawyers.
Moore has put how many cases on hold?
Well, it's hard to know how many cases. Right now, there are over 2,000 felony cases involving the APD. Now, some of those don't necessarily require evidence. If you catch someone red-handed or there's video, they aren't going to acquire guns, drugs, money evidence. On the other hand, if it's like a drug trafficking case, the actual drugs do have to be there for the case to proceed or to get any sort of conviction. Moore was very sharply critical. Hogan, meanwhile, though he didn't specify the individual, said that this was the result of one individual who lost their moral compass. They betrayed the trust the public and the department had placed in them.
Indeed.
We didn't specify which individual.
That audit is going to cost the city $175,000.
It may cost the city $175,000. It may be paid for by drug seizure money. The APD is trying to get approval from the federal government to use drug seizure money to pay for the audit.
Meanwhile, the evidence room is closed. Has the city set up an alternative room for new evidence coming in?
Yes, they've set up an alternative room, which is already in operation. Mm-hmm. So it is, but it is definitely, there was definitely some major tension in the room between the district attorney and Mayor Terry Bellamy noted, she had confidence in the rank and file of the APD, and Moore said he was not talking about the rank and file in his criticisms. But he's been notably critical of the APD's leadership on this role in this matter.
Well, interesting. And that case will continue to evolve, and we'll keep our listeners and readers posted. And there were some other things that happened at the meeting. City Council was covering some fees.
Yes. The city a recent study done by this company, Raftellus, which is a financial consulting company, looked at the city of Asheville's water rate structure and concluded that residents essentially paid too much of the burden for a city of this size and a number of other factors they weighed the water system with, paid too large a percentage of the burden, while large businesses especially large businesses paid too small of a share. So, and to even this out and to get a fair water system structure in the council's opinion, the majority's opinion, they passed an increase of almost 20% on large business and smaller 1-4% increases on multifamily and smaller business customers.
But residential rates, individual household rates
are staying the same, and because that's part of the point of these rates, at least for their advocates, is that they keep residential rates the same, but they're trying to even out these rates that the rest of them pay. And so that less of the water burden, the burden of the water system financially is borne by the residential customers and more is borne by larger business. That's the theory anyway. However, it was a controversial move to some degree. This, along with some other fees, most notably some increases in fairly minor increases in parking fees to get all the parking decks having the same fees. Mm-hmm. And
will they still keep the first hour free in the parking decks?
That's been retained. Mm-hmm. But there were different rates for monthly passes and things like that, and now those are all even across the board. Same for all the decks. And total, these fees, another notable one is $45 to register a domestic or in the registration of a domestic partnership. That's something City passed recently as domestic partner benefits, and it's also established a registration system for them. And so all these fees together pass 4-3, and they'll generate an estimated over $400,000. And most of that's the water fee increases, $400,000 for the city's coffers. As I said, it was a 4-3 vote. It was very close. You had Councilman Bill Russell saying he liked some of the fee increases, but he was concerned that hadn't studied the water rates enough. Bellamy said historically they'd raised fees incrementally on people, and this was too much at once. And in the end, both of them and Councilmember Jan Davis all voted against this. The rest of council, however, you had Esther Mannheimer saying that this was over. They had been studied, they had talked about it, and it was time for this to pass. And Vice Mayor Brownie Newman, he made an argument for the fees. He said that, the cost of infrastructure breaking is far worse than whatever the fee increases would be. The cost of that to customers.
And it's worth noting that the Water Resources Department and the water lines in Asheville, Buncombe, that those fees support a lot of infrastructure improvements. Mm-hmm. And they have a long-range plan for improving things, so it's doesn't necessarily, there's a very small percentage that goes directly into the city coffers.
True. It does. It is part of trying to improve some of the infrastructure as well. Some of it does end up going into the city's general water fund. They're trying to maintain and update this water system. The other item, which kind of interestingly came in closed session, also involves the Asheville Police Department, is that the City Attorney Bob Ost announced that there was a settlement finally in the case of a. Of Sergeant, or then Sergeant Eric Laufer. He was accused of in a sexual harassment suit by Sherry Bird, who was a former officer at the APD.
Mainly because of some sexually explicit text messages
sent out. Yes, there were some sexually explicit and, she said, racially offensive text messages. Interestingly, last summer, after she had filed this suit, the City of Asheville and Laufer's attorney both issued their defenses, and saying that there was no wrongdoing, they'd responded appropriately. One of her claims in the suit was that the higher-ups in the APD and the city and the HR department had all ignored her complaints and not taken appropriate action. They disagreed with her on all that, but they did admit the text messages had been sent. And in this case, the City Attorney Bob Ost told media that after this closed session discussing the case, they decided to settle the case with her, paying her $48,000 and also reimbursing her for $4,100 in mediation fees. So that case is done. Laufer is still employed by the police department. Bird resigned last year.
But he was demoted.
He was demoted.
He's in a different division.
He's back to being a patrol officer, and in the patrol he's employed in the patrol division currently. We got the personnel records from the city on both Laufer and Bird, and he was demoted. He was no longer a sergeant. His pay went down from about $58,000 and some to $53,000, but he is still employed by the police department.
Anything else that came up at the city council meeting? We're going to see most of these in your written report for next week's print issue.
Well, I mean, there were some. They discussed the budget early on, and they discussed, for example, they discussed that URTV had come to them and requested $115,000 that would not be forthcoming, and they wanted a full audit of the equipment And we have a blog post up about that right now where Jan Davis, who's the liaison. The
equipment would come back to the city.
Equipment would come back to the city. Mm-hmm. Jan Davis, who's the council member, was the liaison, said that he had some concerns about the way things have been run towards the end there. And we have a more full account of his concerns there. And he said that if the equipment went back to the city, they had some hope, and he would hope that if another group came along who were willing to start a public access channel, they'd certainly be open to that.
Well, thank you, David, for sharing with us what happened in the city council meeting. And
my pleasure.
We'll await the print edition of that full report. Joining me now is Susan Andrew, our Green Scene columnist, environmentalist, and biologist. She's been working on bats, checking out bats, who are mighty crucial to our ecosystems, but are under threat.
There is a deadly disease affecting bats now. It first arrived in the United States in a cave in New York in 2006, and it's been steadily migrating, making its way here. It's a fungal disease known as white nose syndrome for the characteristic white patches of fungus that appear on the faces of and bodies of hibernating bats during their cave hibernation season. I had occasion to cover, this is my favorite kind of story to do, in the sense that we scrambled up a steep boulder field in a forested, misty forested area near Linville to look for bats in distress with a couple of North Carolina Wildlife Commission biologists whose job it is to look for bats. It's their regular bat survey that's discovered now that the third case of white nose syndrome in western North Carolina was found in McDowell County late last month, and they were there in Linville looking for more cases.
Did they find any there in the cave?
They did collect one bat that was suspicious. It had some lesions on its face and its wings, and it was sent to the lab for testing. But there were more bats that were suspicious in these three caves that we examined. There were bats found roosting near the entrance to the cave, which is part of the syndrome. They should be sleeping deep in the protected reaches of the cave. Instead, they're flying about. They go out to forage. They wake up out of their hibernation, go out to forage. There's no insects to eat at this time of year. So after a couple of trips like that, they've depleted their fat reserves, and they end up on the floor of the cave. So when the biologists see bats at the entrance to the cave, they are strongly suspicious that white nose syndrome is a problem in that cave.
But it's not been confirmed yet, so we're waiting to hear back on that report.
That's right. Okay. Meanwhile, they keep looking, and they're on a happier note. They're searching for volunteers to help them assess bat species distributions and behavior in a volunteer effort in which folks can sign up, get a route to survey bats. You get an acoustic bat detector that gets fixed atop your car, and you help the North Carolina Wildlife Commission understand what's happening with bat behavior and distribution, even as white nose syndrome apparently progresses through our community.
You mentioned that bats eat insects. They actually eat a lot more insects than you might think, and in that way contribute greatly to
controlling pest insects populations in the region. We'd be slapping mosquitoes all night long, I suppose, if bats weren't playing their role of eating them up.
And they can eat a lot of mosquitoes.
Yeah, that's right. All those night-flying insects are under control thanks to the bats. Apparently, white nose syndrome has such a mortality rate that common bat species like the tricolored bat and the little brown bat could be extirpated from western North Carolina in less than two decades. Such is the virulence and the mortality rate associated with disease.
And we always like having Susan in here. She uses all these big words. You mean the bats are going to die?
Yeah, they're going to disappear, and we're going to be scratching our heads as we try to figure out how to control insects and pollinate our crops, because bats
right.
play an important role.
Bats play
in
a
that
surprising
too.
Role in pollination. It's not just all about the bees.
That's right. Lots of plants put their pollen out at night, and bats are really good at helping get it spread around.
Which particular species are here in western North Carolina? You mentioned two. Were those the two you looked at?
Those were the two that we looked at in the cave late last month. Unfortunately, some endangered bat species are also highly affected by white nose syndrome, and they include the Virginia big-eared bat and the Indiana bat, which are both on the endangered species list.
Are those bat species, those are not here locally, it's just the other...
Right, the endangered species that I just mentioned are up in Tennessee mm-hmm. and Kentucky for the most part, mm-hmm. West Virginia.
And the bats, they're surprisingly small. I've had a few find their way into my rock house.
About the size of a hummingbird. Don't weigh much in the hand.
Very tiny, yeah. Very tiny, and hard to get out of your house once you catch them.
The biologists and the commission ask that if folks have bats in your house, that you call the commission and ask for help in removing the bats. Please don't handle dead or alive bats in whatever condition, because they're...
That's good to know, because we set that bat free, and it's somewhere still about my house. Well, Susan, thanks for joining us, and we hope to hear good things about the bats, and that hopefully that is not a confirmed case of white nose, but stay tuned. And that's it for Local Matters.